I'm on this grass. I'm on this grass. I'm on this grass. I'm on this grass. It was like, yeah, there's lots of grass.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe's 21st film, Captain Marvel. And as always, we're going to spoil the shit out of it.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Wine!
And Tim Wick.
Cree forever!
And we're going to talk about Captain Marvel.
Yay!
The MCU film that just came out not too long ago. We are going to talk about the whole movie and where it fits in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So if you haven't seen it yet, you know, we're going to spoil it for you.
Spoil the shit. Spoil the shit out of it.
Right. So, yeah, that was your last chance because...
Let's spoil it.
Yeah.
Spoil it.
So this...
Jude Law's Yon-Rogg.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying, no, it was crazy because, like, the whole time everyone thought he was going to be Mar-Vell, and then he was Yon-Rogg, and it was really cool. And I actually knew who Yon-Rogg was for reasons, and I was glad of it that I knew, and it was great.
Yeah. Yon-Rogg is a Kree villain in the comics who's kind of integral to Carol's origin story and the Psyche Magnetron and all that, that she gets her Kree powers.
I also knew about the Psyche Magnetron.
From, and though they changed things up quite a bit for her origin story, it does fit more in line with, if you want to call them retcons, the recent developments in Carol's origins in the past, you know, so many years of, like, Kelly Sue DeConnick
writing. In the 616?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a good origin story. I really liked the way that, and we were just talking about this with my brother Riley on the way home from the airport yesterday. I really liked that we, the viewer, did not, we kind of didn't know what was going on, just like Carol.
Right.
And so it was I know a lot of people didn't like, or maybe just took issue with the splintered sort of, you know, flashbacky nature of a lot of the film, and the way that you weren't really sure what was going on or what she was remembering. And I liked that. I liked that it felt confusing because she didn't know exactly why she was remembering things she was remembering. And I thought that that was really great.
We were confused with her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. Which made you have more empathy with the character subconsciously.
Sure.
You know, and unless you're a bitch baby cry boy who refuses to have empathy with a woman.
Which, you know.
Tim.
That was my big problem.
Tim
with the movie.
Hated Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Tim was like, fuck this movie.
Like, fuck this movie
women.
With a girl. Whatever. Whatever.
No, you liked it, though?
I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
And I Captain Marvel is not a character I've read a lot in the comics. I, from a spoiler perspective, what they did with the Skrull, I thought was smart. It I don't know if in current comics they've retconned the Skrull to be more like they were in this movie or
No, that was my number one disagreement with it was that the Skrulls seemed so good and that they were good people who just had good hearts and were just trying their best. And I understand that in after some more thinking and some hindsight, it was like, okay, but these were just some Skrulls. These weren't like Skrull leaders or Skrull religious fanatics or anything like that. So if what they're going to pitch the war, the Kree-Skrull war, if they're going to try to pitch it as Kree fanatics like Ronan and, you know, and the others versus Skrull fanatics, you know, that's cool. And they're just trying to show that ordinary people get caught in between. But I don't know that that's what they're going to do.
So, well, I mean, my only pushback will be that, you know, the... And I don't remember the name of the dude, but the Skrull leader.
Talos.
Skrull daddy.
Talos. I mean, he basically says, you know, there's blood on my hands. He implies that the Skrulls are guilty of having done terrible things.
Good, because they have.
But we don't really know what they are. I think that it's more... It was more to me that... that they, if you make the Skrulls an enemy and the Krees an enemy, there probably was just too much.
Yeah.
That they needed to find a way to balance that. And if you're going to turn Captain Marvel into a hero, it felt like she had to discover that lie that mm-hmm. she was being told by the Kree. And when she discovers that the war is not what she believed,
yeah,
right.
That was an important moment for her growth as a character.
So historically in the comics, the Kree and the Skrulls, they're both like space assholes, right? Like neither one of them is super great,
right? That's what.
On average, I would say the Kree are the good guys more often than they're the bad guys,
yeah.
And the Skrulls are overwhelmingly more the bad guys.
They're shape shifting assholes,
except for Talos.
Yeah,
in the comics, Talos can't shape shift. It's a genetic defect. It's a rare mutation in the Skrulls. He overcompensates for that by becoming one of the most ruthless and evil fucking Skrulls that ever existed. So, it's a huge departure for the character in this movie. Not just that he can shapeshift. I don't really care about that part. Like, whatever. He's a Skrull. They generally shapeshift.
Yeah.
He shapeshifted. So, I'm kind of thinking that we're getting set up for having the rug pulled out.
Possibly.
And the Skrulls being the bad guys.
I was hoping that.
In the next phase 4.
Yeah.
Secret Invasion or something like that.
Secret Invasion is my favorite storyline in all of Marvel. And it is basically the Skrulls. So you don't know it, but the Skrulls have infiltrated the Avengers and a lot of other superheroes. And you find out when they kill somebody and they turn into a Skrull.
Elektra, I think.
Is it Elektra?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, wait, what the fuck? And then now there's all this suspicion as to who's a Skrull, who isn't.
How long has she been a Skrull?
No one knows. And
why,
like,
weren't we able to detect her?
Yeah.
We can usually detect Skrulls.
Yeah, DNA, like Skrull DNA, yeah. like it shows up. Like it's crazy. Like, and it throws everyone.
Yeah.
Really genius characters, you know, like Reed Richards, who obviously we're not going to see, but others, you know, who are like super intelligent, and they feel that their observation skills are beyond reproach,
so,
are having their cores shaken by that. So that would be a fun thing to do.
So, and they're really leaning into the Kree being the like big evil empire thing, which I don't mind at all, not one bit. I think the Kree in this movie were really great, and they actually filled in a bunch of gaps for the way the Kree have been portrayed in the other
Guardians
MCU
mostly, right?
movies. Yeah, so like Ronan,
we've seen Ronan. Yeah,
yeah.
Lee Pace.
So Ronan the Accuser, in Guardians of the Galaxy, like all he wants is that Infinity Stone, and he wants it so fucking bad.
Yeah, he does.
But now we know why he knows about their existence and why he wants one so bad, and why he thinks that one person can tame that much power. Because
he's seen someone hold one.
Carol destroyed one of his fucking bombing, you know, accuser ships without breaking a sweat.
He's seen a human being in his mind have ultimate power.
Right.
And therefore,
he's like, why can't I?
So I think that filled that gap kind of well. I think we learned more about the Kree, and we got to see other Kree than the blue Kree, though they didn't really explain why there are so many different colors of Kree.
See, even though I just kind of filled in, well, the Kree clearly are a race that take over other planets, and if what they're doing is basically integrating other races into their empire, then they could look different.
The Kree are basically each and every one of them a superhero. I mean, they genetically have perfected themselves, and part of that including the DNA of other.
And I will say, genetically perfecting yourselves as a race isn't usually hero territory.
Usually doesn't.
Right, yeah.
Even though that's what they think of themselves as. You know, and I'll going back to the Skrull a little bit and the secret invasion and stuff like that, I feel like you could still do that. Because again, this is only a group of refugee Skrulls, you know,
exactly.
And there could be other Skrulls that it's like, this is what we're going to do to create a new home on this planet or whatever they.
Well, now they know where Earth is.
Yeah, right.
That's a big deal. It's now the Skrulls, or at least some of them, know where Earth is.
Even better,
and they know what we look like, and they know about our culture.
Even better.
Even
if Talos, now they knew where Earth is.
Yes.
Oh, right.
They knew it for 25 years. Yeah. They knew where Earth is. Like, that's what's super cool is they showed it. It was like 1994, I thought, 1993.
Yeah.
So like
mid-90s.
Yeah. So like it's been, you know, a quarter century that they've known.
Right.
So God, how, I mean, if they've done something,
yeah,
it could have been forever.
How many did every single Skrull that was here leave?
Yeah.
I didn't do a head count.
There were four of them, and I don't think we saw all of them die.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there's one of them missing by my, and I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I've watched the movie twice, but I was thinking about this because one of them's Talos.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's the one that dies in the car.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's his science guy. And where's the other one?
Well, we also know that didn't she kill the one that was that was shape-shifting when she fights like the old lady on the bus and stuff
like that? No, I don't think she did. That one got away.
Okay. So, I mean, there could be even more.
Yeah.
Remember in the train station, that one gets away. That one shapeshifts through the train station and gets away.
The train station, by the way, if you keep your eyes out for the red-haired woman in the train station, the subway, that's Kelly Sue DeConnick, the one who's most responsible for the way Carol looks now.
Mm. Her shorter hair.
Yeah,
she
commissioned that look with a lot of feedback and direction from artist Jamie McKelvey, she paid out of pocket because Marvel didn't want to front the money. So she paid him for the redesign, and they ended up using the art, and I think she got reimbursed for it.
Nice.
Well, that's nice.
Baller move.
Yeah.
So my brother asked a question that I thought was really interesting. Does the way that they portrayed Captain Marvel and some of the admittedly cheesy little things they did. For example, how the stinger at the end, how he renames it the Avengers Initiative because her code name was Avenger. Riley's point was, doesn't that mean Captain America isn't the first Avenger? And doesn't that change that?
No.
And like, doesn't that mean all this stuff?
Captain America, the first Avenger, the title of the Captain America movie, almost entirely takes place during World War II.
Yep.
Oh.
So,
good point.
I mean,
but that wasn't his code name, and they weren't calling it the Avengers Initiative then. It's interesting.
Well, so
you think it's just because he was oldest?
In the comics, Janet Van Dyne is who names the team the Avengers.
Okay.
And Steve is not a founding member of the Avengers.
Oh, shit.
He's not there. He hasn't been thawed and hasn't joined the team yet. But, I mean, obviously later he gets thawed and joins, and later, I mean, this is kind of retconny or whatever, but later, like, I think it's Tony Stark himself who says, you know, like, yeah, we were called the Avengers, but we weren't the Avengers until we had Steve.
I remember
that. Like,
I remember they're doing a flashback to all the training he taught them and like the heart.
His
and
leadership skills and all that. So like,
cool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it undoes anything.
That was the one thing.
I think that's why would you choose that battle? I don't know.
That was such a fan service-y thing that made not even fan service. I didn't like that. That was the one thing I didn't like. I didn't like the whole, like, oh, her code name was Avenger? The Avengers Initiative. It just felt very, it felt like the one thing I didn't like in Solo, which is when he says, what's your name? Han. You know, what's your surname? Like, I'm traveling alone or I don't have one or whatever it is. And he's like, Han Solo. And it's like, oh, give me a fucking break.
Well,
like, it's fine, but it pulls me out of the world a little bit.
I thought that was fine. The unanswered thing I didn't need answered in Han Solo was where he got his signature DL-44 or DH-44 blaster or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that part.
But back to Captain Marvel, that Avengers Initiative thing, I was just a little bit like, at least it was in a stinger.
So on that, I think what it was doing was establishing something more clearly for the audience that I thought was established plenty clear, but they're just, you know, dumbing it down a little, making it more accessible. The fact that Carol is why Nick Fury is looking to the skies. He's looking for all these superheroes. He's looking. Right. So this whole incident with her and the Skrulls and the Kree is what got it all started and prompted it, got it all going. And I think, you know, taking the name of her call sign and using that as a team just makes that more clear for people who maybe didn't get that.
In that case, then I would have preferred it said the Danvers Initiative.
Ah.
And then he was like, no, the Avengers Initiative. You know,
sure.
That would have been cooler. If he was like, we're just going to call it Danvers because it's because of her that we're doing it.
What did he start with?
It's a word that's
the
like
protector or something like that.
Initiative.
I
thought, but I was watching something today. What he started with was actually a reference to a different
Oh.
A different, it was actually
it wasn't
a reference.
The Defenders, was it?
No, but it was, I think the Protector is, because the original Captain Marvel was like the Protector of the Galaxy or something like that.
Okay.
So it was a reference to some Captain Marvel stuff from the comics.
And that's cool. I don't mind when it's in a stinger, because in a stinger, that's where you put the kind of ridiculous stuff that makes people either clap really loud or maybe roll their eyes a little and go, okay, like the Howard the Duck thing.
Sure.
You know, where you're like, all right,
Howard,
you know,
the
like
Duck.
Howard the Duck. Like, it's not like, and now Howard the Duck's a character.
I wonder if he was dusted. Anyway, sorry. Sorry, spoilers.
If he wasn't, he snorted whoever was dusted in front of him. That drug fiend.
Or smoked him.
Rolled them up in a 70s style Lucy.
Yeah.
there were a couple of things that I thought the movie filled gaps of. Like the Kree stuff we mentioned.
Yeah.
The Avengers thing, you know, why Nick Fury's looking to the sky.
His eye.
And all that. Nick Fury's eye.
People are so mad he lost his eye in such a pussy way, and I'm really glad. That's how people lose eyes.
Yeah.
Well, in one of the other movies, he said someone asked him how he lost his eye, and he said, because I trusted someone I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And that makes that
it's
line,
like, that's totally accurate.
That makes that line fucking hilarious
because
someone he trusted was a cat.
Yes.
That he is gonzo for.
No one wants to hear how you actually lost your eye or your tooth.
Can I just say I love the way Nick Fury is just like, oh, hi, little
a cat person.
Oh,
yeah.
He's such a cat person. He turns into such... He's like a badass who turns into just like the nicest person when this cat shows up.
The best part about that for me was right before we saw Captain Marvel, I was watching the live feed with Goose, which is the cat, and they just did... Marvel did like an hour and a half Facebook Live video.
Really?
Where they just had Goose, and he was just on a set with like Captain Marvel stuff, and they had different like toys and things for him and places for him to play and sleep. And then every like 20 minutes, they were like, what should Goose's backdrop be next? Like, should it be like Kree City, or should it be like Avengers Mansion? And people would vote, and then they'd change the green screen backdrop. And then at a certain point, for some reason, Samuel L. Jackson was there. And all of a sudden, they don't advertise it, just all of a sudden, Samuel L. Jackson walks on screen and picks up Goose and is like, come on, bud, and like puts him somewhere else to eat. And then he's gone, and he's just in street clothes. And it was just like, what the fuck just happened? And so when he all of a sudden, when Nick Fury is like, oh, he's a little cutie boy, I was like, yeah, he loves cats.
So another thing that the movie reestablishes or kind of reaffirms is, so after World War II, the United States gets their hands on the Tesseract.
Yeah.
And
is that the cosmic cube of... Is that what they call the cosmic cube, basically?
The cosmic cube is a different thing in the comics, but it is the cosmic cube.
It's the analog of the MCU.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
So,
okay.
So the cosmic, they get their hands on the Tesseract, and they box it up, and they don't really do much with it.
Mm-hmm.
After they see how Carol gets her powers from it, all of a sudden they start up a weapons program using the Tesseract to make and develop
later.
Weapons.
Yeah.
Well, they'd been sitting on it this whole time.
That's what I'm saying.
But remember, in Avengers, Steve actually stumbles on into them making weapons from the cube, and he's really, really upset about it because that's what the fucking Nazis were doing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the Red Skull was doing. That's what he, you know,
everything he
gave his entire life for. Right, yeah. Whether or
and
not
that's
he,
and that's what Loki steals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's going to use it to take over the Earth, or so they think.
Right. And this might also be how Loki knows the cube is there. That's not necessarily super clear, but if some Kree know it's there, and you know, therefore the cosmic universe kind of knows it's there now, that could be how, you know, Loki and therefore Thanos get
and
their
the
hands
Skrull,
on it too.
Because again, I still think there's a Skrull left on Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, I would not. I don't doubt it. Especially, I mean, because it would be so easy to say there was, and you just don't, even if you're counting all of the ones,
right?
Because it's just like, oh, well, remember when you thought there was only one? There were two then, huh?
Well, we never see them land on Earth.
Right.
We never see how many show up in the first place.
Yeah.
We don't know how many of them there are on that carrier ship or any of that. Like, no.
So a little bit with Captain Marvel, as a person who was a teenager in the early 90s, and through the mid-90s, I appreciated, you know, a lot of the 90s jokes and stuff. But
music.
A lot of it, it was weird. And I talked about seeing it with a couple other people at work. And it seems like our theater that we were at was maybe an anomaly. So maybe, Tim, you can tell me, when you saw it, did people clap for what seemed like just tech references?
Oh, no.
Okay. Because in our movie, it was like they showed a VHS and people were like, ah! Or like they did the when they pulled back and it was a Blockbuster. No. People were like howled laughter. What was the, they had
I think it was just, it was someone picked up the copy of, what was the Air Force movie?
It was to Top Gun. Oh, Right Stuff.
There was something else too. Like, oh, it was when they had to wait to download the file.
Oh yeah,
from the
disc.
Yeah.
That was funny.
A bunch of people started laughing and clapping. Like, okay. It was weird. It was.
I think that was mostly this one woman in our audience who was just a few seats down from us.
Yeah.
Who was inappropriately enthusiastic and loud about the movie during the entire movie. And I think sometimes, like, people will hear laughter and just start laughing,
yeah,
even if it's not
that's
funny.
Fair.
I blame her entirely.
It was really weird because part of me was just like, yeah, those existed. Or like, yeah, that's what happened. Did you people not use computers before 2000? That's how they worked.
She was like screaming during the entire.
That's right.
During the entire stinger.
She's the reason
we couldn't hear what was being said.
Yeah, when Captain Marvel shows up with the Avengers and she says something.
Where's Fury?
Yeah, yeah. We had the kid behind us was like, oh, I Googled it. She says, where's Fury? Because we were there, you know, like, opening night.
Huh.
Like, and the woman was cheering so loud when she saw Chris fucking Evans that, like, you couldn't hear anything that was said.
Yeah, we did not have that problem.
Every time an Avenger showed up or any other previous MCU character showed up, she was like, for like a good 10 seconds.
It was rough.
Wow.
Like Coulson showed up and she screamed. Like,
it's like, lady, it's okay to enjoy the movie, but not to the point that it ruins it for other people.
It was weird.
And I normally I'd be super grumpy about that sort of thing. And like, it's totally the type of thing that I'm a curmudgeon about.
Sure.
But like, I had a really hard time begrudging someone their inappropriate enthusiasm about a movie where it's like, it's a woman, I'm guessing, female presenting, I'm assuming it was a woman in the audience, who was there to see the first, you know, Marvel movie that stars a woman who's a strong character and all that jazz. Like, I wasn't too upset about it because of a lot of those factors.
As a woman, I was really upset that my experience seeing said movie was robbed by another woman. So I am curmudgeonly about it, and I'm a little frustrated that I had to have a teenager had to Google what it was said for me so that I could find out what the fuck the last words of the movie were.
Though
I think you got to give the movie a certain, I give the movie a lot of credit for the fact that the leads were a black man and a woman.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Right. And no romance.
There was no romance. There was never an implied romance.
Huge.
Although there's a lot of people.
No romance, no unrequited love, no guy who wishes he could be with her, but he's not going to. No one ever said, you can't do that, you're a girl. Or she's not going to be able to do it because she's a woman. Or a girl is powerful.
There was never, like, when she's getting into the fight with the Kree at the end, they're never like, oh, you're a girl, we can't.
No.
Take you down.
Not even a moment for laughs where you know that they're going to get their asses handed to them, which is great. Because that was my biggest complaint about Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman was 60% misogynist jokes and tropes. She reversed with her amazingness.
It's just like the Big Bang Theory. They get away with saying racist and sexist shit, and then someone goes, oh, guys, you shouldn't say that.
Right.
But they never correct the behavior or fix the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they make money off the behavior.
So basically they just are getting away with that.
This movie was way more feminist than Wonder Woman.
The biker that tells her that she gets the motorcycle from, that she's like, just smile, you know, baby.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's that moment, but like, he is clearly a negative example. He's clearly, it's not like a joke for us.
No, yeah, it's not
even a joke.
And it wasn't doubting her abilities or anything like that. It was the kind of shit that we hear every day.
Yeah,
that worked out.
Yeah, to me, I thought that moment was, they didn't play it for laughs. They played it like, this is shit that really happens.
Right, I agree. It's different.
That was a big thing to me, honestly. Like there not being any kind of romantic thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because usually they'll be like, oh, there's no romantic lead. But then it turns out there's some guy or some woman, if it's a guy lead, right, who like is desperately in love with the protagonist,
right, sure,
and who isn't ever going to. And it's just going to be like, isn't it funny that they have unrequited love? Ha ha. Like,
and there is some fan shipping between Carol Danvers and her friend in the Air Force, whose name, again, I never remember.
Sure.
Monica Rambeau.
Yeah,
Rambeau.
Monica Rambeau. There's been a lot of stuff out there about some implication there's a relationship between those two. I didn't see it, but...
I think, okay, so not to shit on either one of you, but I think people who say, one, making that romantic cheapens their relationship, and people who are like, oh, I didn't see any relationship, they clearly have a relationship. And it doesn't have to be sexual,
right,
to be meaningful, emotional, a love relationship. Like, I think it's just people like, oh, that would cheapen it. It's like, cheapen what? The fact that they love each other? Like,
no,
I don't mean you. I'm just saying that's a standard answer I've seen. Complaining against the people who are trying to ship them together.
I think we need more examples of like characters that love each other, that there's, if you'll excuse the term, this sort of fraternal love.
Sure. Platonic
love. We more of that that isn't romantic.
Or emotionally charged and even like sexual consideration relationship with someone and never talk about it.
Sure.
Like you can have a friend who you're like, I mean, I think we're into each other, but it's just never come up, you know, because she's got her thing, I've got my thing, and we're not going to talk about it.
Besides, we need to wait and get Marvel's first interracial relationship going between her and Rhodey.
Oh yeah, that's how she did date Rhodey.
They dated for a long time. They can't do the Spider-Man thing though, because that would be creepy with how much older she is. But in the comics, Carol and Peter go out on a couple dates together, and they're like, there's like no chemistry. Their dates keep on getting interrupted by like superhero shenanigans. And every time they're just like, I'm really not feeling this. Are you? No, not really. Like it's great.
Oh,
it's a great moment in the comics. They can't do that because.
Well, because right now in the MCU, Peter Parker's like almost 30, so it's a little easier.
Peter Parker.
Oh, in the MCU, I meant in the 616.
Yeah.
He's more Parker Industries.
He's, like third,
he's not high
he's
school.
He's like more like 13, but
So I guess what I'm doing is I'm agreeing in that they didn't fall back to the tropes of
a
romantic
nice.
Relationship. And it's not that I have a problem if she has a relationship with Monica.
Yeah.
It's that I just didn't see it.
No, so, I know. It's one of those things where it's like, not to pull the girl card, but I think they had there was so much between them that would be impossible or clumsy if you tried to put it on screen.
Sure.
And I think they shared a lot of that when they talked about we had, you know, there isn't, women can't fly. What is it? Women can't fly.
Combat.
It's the mid-90s. They can't.
Right.
Yeah.
And so to be like, women can't fly combat, so this is the best we have. And you have to still be the best of the best to get here.
Right.
I think that. And maybe because I'm a woman, when I heard that, I was like, oh, so they're like best friends, or they're huge enemies. It's one of the two.
Sure.
That's
rivals.
I mean, it's rivals or best friends when you're put in that situation. That is a pressure cooker.
And I don't think rival and best friend are mutually exclusive.
Never.
Yeah.
And so I think that it was very obviously, you know, Monica's got a kid. There's no like dad in the picture, right? So like they obviously, I think Carol has been a stand-in for a lot of those big moments in her life.
Sure.
And it seemed like very, like they had that familial love relationship tested by fire and gone through so much shit that we can't even begin to talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe they tumbled into bed a couple times. Who cares?
Who knows? it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's worth noting that Monica is actually a character in the comics, Photon or Spectrum or Phaser.
She gets powers?
She is actually Captain Marvel before Carol ever gets the title Captain Marvel.
Actually, I thought it was the daughter that actually is the...
I don't think that's right. What's the daughter's name?
I gotta look it up.
She's wearing the necklace that says it. It's, shit. It's not Monica. It's something else. Because she's wearing her daughter's name. Maybe Monica is the daughter. And Maria is the mom.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah. Maybe Monica's the daughter, because I'm remembering the necklace. Because I remember thinking, like, my necklace says necklace. Her necklace says her kid's name.
Yeah. You're right. The daughter is Monica. Monica. Yeah.
Cool. So Monica becomes
And they make that joke about her getting glowy like her aunt.
Yeah.
They do,
So maybe, good call. So she...
My bad.
She is... No, I appreciate it.
No, I mean Maria. I kept calling her Monica.
Yeah.
It's because her necklace says Monica, and people usually wear necklaces with their own names, unless they're me.
So maybe we'll get something on that in the future.
I have one thing before we move on, if that's okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, one thing I really liked about the movie is with the stinger... Not the final after credits one, but the mid credit that's just a joke. The mid credits one that is you know, substantive.
Where she shows up.
That's it. She just shows up. It's they've got the pager going. That by the way, that mid credits one was directed by the Russo brothers.
Oh, cool.
I'm pretty sure that's gonna show up in Endgame. Just like that.
It's so great. That we don't have to worry about this introduction between them. We don't have to worry about like how she finds them. We already know the pager's been activated. We already know she gave him the pager. What do we get in the credits? She shows up and says, "Where's Fury?" They've already met each other.
Yeah.
We don't need to go through all that shit.
That's good.
That means the 3 hours of Endgame is going to be that much less of the characters getting to know Captain Marvel. And I love that. Get to the fucking.
I'm ready for the fucking. Soon, too. So two quick things. One, what did you guys think about the music?
Because I loved it.
I thought it was really good, except for one thing. I did not like that they used Just a Girl in that fight scene. Mostly because I think that there are other No Doubt songs that would have worked fine. Spiderwebs is a pumpy up song. Like, there are other songs they could have used. It being Just a Girl felt a little too, like, to me, and made me kind of, it pulled me out of the fight scene a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose. I like that song.
I like the song too, but in no point did they ever say she was just a girl. No one was saying she was just a girl. Like, that was the whole message of the movie was she's not just a girl.
When she's training for the Air Force, she's doubted for her gender specifically.
Yes, but like, she's got Kree powers, man. I know, like, but
the Yon Rogg thing about, like, you're too emotional and your emotions are getting the better of you, like, that might not be sexist to Kree, but for humans, telling a woman that she's being too emotional or irrational is, like, a sexist thing.
There are a couple of things that have been written about this movie that it is a woman's story, because what's happening in this film is she's being gaslit by the Kree.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. I do wish that they had used Just a Girl in the credits.
Okay.
And used something else there. Just a Girl would have been a great credit song. And everyone would have been like, and it wasn't a good fight music. But otherwise, I loved it.
I liked, that didn't bother me. It's a catchy song. I like the song. Yeah. I like the fight scene, so it worked for me. But otherwise, like, what do they have? Like, Garbage and...
Yeah, they play the song I Lost My Virginity to.
Luscious Jackson.
So I was kind of like, I'm only happy when it rains.
Yeah. Garbage, It was... I loved it, but then again, like, you know... What do they say? Like, you love the music from the era when you started fucking. And
that's, you know, the music. I don't remember what comedian it is. It says, the music you were listening to whenever it was that you started having sex is the music you will love for the rest of your life.
And sure enough.
Is it true, Tim? Think about it. Is it true?
He loves the dregs music, Molly. And
it's a difficult question to answer.
So my other thing is, since we were talking about this end credits, a couple people have pointed out, so this crisis, this Endgame crisis, is when he finally texts Captain Marvel. Yeah. So when New York was being destroyed by aliens, he didn't think to text her. And like, when Ultron was going crazy and everything else, Sokovia, like all that, he never texted her. And I'm fine with it, because I'm like, it wasn't as big of an emergency. He had other people to help him.
Exactly. For all those other things, he had the Avengers.
It didn't look like they were out of their depth yet.
He felt like he had it covered. It was going to be bad, but it was going to be okay.
How many Avengers had died before Infinity War?
Exactly. Yeah.
They had it. Yeah. They had it under control. Yep.
And that's why I feel it's a good... I think this is the only time he would have used it, because he realizes that it's not just that his team is gone. It's that half the world, the universe is gone.
Right.
Now, he's got a pager and hope that she didn't get dusted.
He's watching people just dissolve.
Yeah. Yep.
He's
not knowing if he could be next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having no idea what's happening. Is it a virus? Is it like, what happened?
Know. It's like, yeah. No one
knows.
Now's the time.
Yeah.
Now's the time.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I agree. All right. Those are the two sticking points I've had people bring up lately that I wanted to make sure we cover.
So real quick before we get to five questions, Tim, do you have a favorite part? We can't all say goose.
In my brain, I was like, I'm going to say goose.
So, Tim, I'm asking you first. So
what's
if you want to say
non-goose
goose,
ball?
There you go. What's your favorite non-goose part of the movie?
The subway, the L train fight.
With the old one, when the Skrull's the old woman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I just love how everybody's
in the preview,
like trying to stop
when she
her.
She punched that old woman. Nick and I both went, Skrulls! Like, yeah. We knew immediately we were so
You know,
excited.
It's a Skrull. And if, I mean, in this movie, you know it's a Skrull, but everybody around her doesn't.
On the train.
And they react exactly as they would. Yeah. Even when
filming
the old,
it?
Even when the old lady starts,
oh, no, they aren't filming
starts beating her beating her up back. They're all helping the old lady because she's beating up an old lady.
Yep.
I like that. I thought that was a good moment.
What about you, Molly?
I think my favorite part was that montage of her getting up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Of all the times she fell down.
Nice.
And all the times she was like she hits the ground and then like you just see her like her fist in the ground or her hand planted as she pushes herself up. And that was just so beautiful. And it was just kind of that was a very human thing. You know, that felt like that was one of those human things to me where it's like, that's what we do. We get back up. Like, that's what humans do. Nick, what is yours?
I really like the changes and how they did Carol's origin story.
Hey,
like,
cool.
Like the test pilot thing, the explosion with the Tesseract, the power engine, all that stuff. Like, I really like that quite a bit. And it was close enough to the way things happen with while they got to remove all the like super rapey misogynist parts of her origin.
Yeah.
And so like it was a good series of scenes that we kind of got put together in flashbacky bits, but also like I liked it what it was for what it changed.
I also want to say that the moment when she like energy blasts him and is like, I don't have to prove myself to you.
Yeah.
That was a nice moment.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, prove yourself. Don't use your powers. Let's just fight. She's like, fuck you.
Yeah. Right? Fuck you. Oh, don't use your powers so we can just fight. How about instead I just fucking annihilate you, asshole?
Yeah.
Don't fight me if you don't want me to use my powers.
Word.
Yeah. It's like, well, hold on. Put your gun down and fight me fair. No, you get shot. That's how that works.
No,
like,
you're trying to kill me.
Yeah.
But,
no.
Also, just really glad that this did really well, and I knew it was going to, but just in general, really happy for that.
Oh, no doubt.
Anything, it's just like, it's just like when The Last Jedi was doing really well, despite everyone's bitch baby cry
lines. I know,
because
you look at the fucking reviews, they tanked the audience reviews on.
They claim they tanked Solo, too, and that Solo didn't make as much money as it would have without, because they didn't go, and it's
I know.
Sure.
Yeah.
They tanked the audience reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, didn't make a goddamn bit of difference.
Nope.
It's like, oh, go fuck yourself.
In a meaningful way.
Which is all they can do anyway.
Hey, Molly.
Yes.
Who we got some questions from?
We have five questions from Jessica Dalton Morgan.
Sweet.
And she says, hi, GWG. Since I have already answered all three sets of questions, I am running out of things to say other than I love the podcast, especially that the episodes can be about either G, so that there is a good mix of serious toned episodes to lighter toned episodes.
Hey.
Yeah.
Well, I got good news for you. Listen next week.
Yeah.
So she says, here are my five cues for you to A. Question one. What is your favorite non-geeky example of a media? Books, big screen, small screen, or podcasts? So what's your favorite non-geeky media? You can choose just one media overall or give answers for each type. So give me something in any media that's your favorite non-geeky version of that.
Everything's geeky about something, but I guess I'll say that, you know, kind of like one of my super guilty pleasures that I will watch over and over again and I don't even fucking know why is Top Chef. I will watch Top Chef over and over again.
You watch reruns where you already know who wins?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. I don't even know why. I don't know why.
Are you doing other things?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like when I'm fixing food or something.
Okay.
It's like something for background noise.
Yeah.
Hey, that's us that all swim.
Yeah.
Top Chef is kind of the thing I go to. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Nick, you have any answers there?
Boy, I don't know. I guess, you know, my favorite movie is Taxi Driver. But it's kind of iconic in a punk way, which is kind of inherently nerdy. So,
sure.
But I don't think it's a nerd movie at all. I don't think it's a nerd cinema.
I agree with that.
I'm very fond of the movie.
Cool.
I would say I read a lot of books that are probably not at all geeky, mostly because they're just about people getting murdered or kidnapped or kidnapped and then murdered or murdered before they got kidnapped. And, you know, I don't know. That's probably the geek-lessest thing I read is I also enjoy British rom-com fiction.
Oh, yeah.
I don't necessarily like American stuff. They used to call it chick lit, but I'm calling it rom-com because because sometimes it's men, you know, like Nick Hornsby.
I feel like that's geeky, though.
Little geeky. I mean,
There's this author that writes murder mysteries set in national parks.
Sure.
And I read her stuff.
That's definitely geeky.
This is like
a random beautiful girl gets seen on the tube, and then this guy decides to steal random beautiful girls from the tube, and then he tortures and murders them, and only one cop can figure it out. I read.
That's generous.
A renegade robot.
You read
cop.
Much worse than that.
Okay, only a couple times. Yes. All right. Yeah. Question two. If you could have any geeky job from a movie or TV series, which would it be? The job can be totally fictional, for example, SHIELD agent, or real, forensic anthropologist or other lab worker at the Jeffersonian Institute with bones. But please give full details as to what you, such as would you want to be involved in the events of the show, movie, or more on the sidelines? So again, if you could have any geeky job from a movie or TV series, which would it be?
And full details.
Yeah, I will start.
Okay.
I have always wanted to be a forensic pathologist, like in CSI, which I think is a geeky show. That has always been something I wanted to do. Forensic pathology was something I was going to go into until I was in high school, and I found out in order to take anatomy, you were going to have to dissect a cat, and I was done. And I was like, do we just skip to cadavers? Can I not do cats and dogs? And they're like, no, has to be cats and dogs before you move on to people. And I knew I wouldn't be able to handle it. But I would be a forensic pathologist on CSI, preferably on the sidelines, the person doing all the work that makes the test take somehow.
You'd be
20
the person
minutes.
That shows up for 5 minutes in the episode,
exactly.
offers one or two really important bits of information,
and
then you don't see them until the next episode.
It doesn't have to be CSI. I'll be on any show that has a forensic pathologist.
Sure, sure, why not?
Sure.
I am going to go to Star Trek and say I want to be somebody who flies a starship.
Nice.
Because fucking A, man.
Hell yeah.
I want to fly a starship across the universe.
I like
that. That would be so cool.
You'd be pilot.
Yeah.
Man, I have no idea. This is rough. I've been really thinking. Maybe like BPRD. Agent like Hellboy.
Oh, sure.
Like, you know,
that would be cool.
Just like a librarian or something. Like not a field guy, but you know, your job is to look through all these ancient tomes and find something relevant to demons that they might be fighting
so
that
like
week.
Giles.
But you want to be
Giles.
No, I don't want to be Giles.
You don't want to be the Slayer's
a
guy?
Tiny cog in that bigger.
You want to be Giles's boss.
or a Giles's more secure corporate job.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Question three. If you were to create a belief system or cult centered around yourself, what would it be like? It would be a cult about goats, obviously, and silliness. People who followed Molly, it would be a cult of silliness where we believe that to be silly is to be divine. And only when you have given yourself up and given yourself over to the sense that you are ridiculous, can you actually become closer to divinity. And we would have a goat farm where you milk goats and we'd make cheese and all that stuff so that we would have a working farm for our co-op, which you have to have, obviously.
When you're a cult,
everyone has to work and live there. And also, it would be a child-free thing. It would only be people who are child-free couples would come join my cult of silliness, childlessness, and goats.
I definitely have some sort of a hedonistic.
Oh yeah.
Not necessarily all drunk like Bacchus, but
sure.
You know, like people can kind of do whatever as long as it doesn't harm anyone, and also it'd be about indulging yourself.
Would your cult hire outside help for kitchen duties and stuff, or would you? Like, would somebody somehow have to, like, give up their hedonism for an hour in order to do the dishes?
Part of hedonism could be, like, making extravagant things and then watching people eat or enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that is also sure. indulgent and sensual, not necessarily, like, sexual.
The sensualness of washing the dishes and doing your fucking chores.
Well, maybe
I think your
part.
Cult needs help. Like, it needs, like well, by which
yeah.
I mean staff.
Outside,
your cult,
yeah,
your
I
cult
mean,
needs staff.
It's not all fun all the time. Like,
sure.
you know, someone has to, like, bake the brie into bread. You know,
yeah.
it's not going to do itself.
Someone has to turn on the oven at least.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I like that. Nick's
and,
hedonism
yeah.
cult.
Yeah. My cult would probably be based around not being a dick around other people. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean my cult would be like the cult of zipper merging. So that you could merge onto the freeway without slowing down traffic. And it would be like a cult where, like, when you go to Disney World and there are eight of you, you don't walk shoulder to shoulder slower
yeah.
than everybody
that
else.
That should be against
fuck
the law.
People.
It
should
it's
be against
crime.
It should be absolutely. And you're not the cult of when you're like walking along in a big crowd of people, you don't stop and try and read a menu that's 6 feet away from you. You actually turn.
Can you tell Tim just got back from Disney World?
So my cult would just be like, why don't you learn to be people learning how to behave around other people?
The cult Ooh. Of common decency.
Yes.
Would your cult like just be at Disney World? And it's like a thing that
oh,
people
yeah.
have to be at
yeah,
Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it sounds like you have a lot of things that are all over the place. Traffic, Disney. Like, where is your cult centrally located? Or is
I think,
it more
I think
of a
we'd,
membership
we'd located
thing?
At Disney World. And yeah. people drive like dicks there too. So
you're already so part of the Disney Vacation Club. You're halfway
yeah,
there.
I'm already, yeah.
There's lots of good metaphor you can come up
yeah.
with for using the zipper merge. Like, that can be your symbol.
Zipper merging would work,
you know,
for standing in line to Space Mountain too.
A zipper pull takes two opposite sides and
brings
them
together
in an embrace.
Be the zipper pull you wish to see in the world.
The cult of the Nick Hedonism cult has no God, because everything we see and interact with in the world is through our own senses, which can betray us because our brains are traitors. So, you know, let's enjoy
yeah.
and fuck with those senses.
All right.
No gods.
Question four. Either how would you recast the major parts of a film franchise, or what would be your dream cast for a book that you would like made into a movie?
Oh my God, dream casting. I should have read these ahead of time.
Yeah. I'll say, how about this? Let's each pick a role.
Okay.
For the sake of time.
Okay. Right.
What's a role from a book or from a movie that you would recast, and who would you cast?
Superman.
Ooh, who would you cast as Superman?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. But
Tim,
if it was something
there,
we're all going to answer,
is
I just,
it,
you know.
Oh, you want us all to do
Oh,
super,
I thought that's
I see.
What you're
no,
saying.
No, I'm just saying, like, pick somebody that you, just one cast, instead of a
oh,
cast.
Oh, come back
pick
to
one
me
person.
Come
yeah.
back to
okay.
me.
Tim, if you were going to, like, recast Indiana Jones, for example, is there
you see, that's
you would,
what I'm thinking
that's
about.
That's what I was
if
thinking
I'm,
you'd pick.
If I'm going to recast Indiana Jones, if we're going to do a remake
yeah.
of Indiana Jones, and I'm looking at actors that we've got right now.
Yes, right now. It's a 2019 remake.
That I think would fit that character. There's like nobody that to me really nails it yet.
I feel,
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, all right. So I will talk what you guys think.
Okay.
I think I've got something here. I have long wanted to see The King Killer Chronicles brought to screen.
Oh yeah.
And so Kvothe is the protagonist. Kvothe is a he has red hair, red, like true flame red, bright red hair. He is a lithe boy who looks young, but he's also had some hard road ahead of him. He does magic and things like that. And I think that Eddie Redmayne is a little too old, but would be a good job at playing Coat in The Frame. Like the shopkeep who's a little worn out and maybe seems a little unassuming and doesn't seem like the guy from the stories. I think he'd be a good Coat. And I think you'd have to find a kid to play the 14-year-old Kvothe. I think you'd just have to find some British kid. I think it's important that Kvothe has an English accent. I don't know why, but I feel like he should.
No,
I feel
I get
like
it
should be
that.
English. The whole thing feels very European to me, but yeah, I guess. So I guess Eddie Redmayne as old Coat, and who we don't know a lot about yet, how he got there.
All right, I got it.
All
I
right,
got one. I
what's
got
yours?
Mine. I'm not going to say Superman. Let's forget that for a moment.
All right.
This is something I thought about recently. So, when they eventually bring in the mutants to Marvel stuff, now that Disney owns all that, right? Stick with me. I think this could go somewhere.
Okay.
Wolverine should be played by someone that's short and has brownish black hair.
Yep.
And could get buff.
Yep.
And be a wild man if they needed. Yep. I think Kit Harington.
Ooh.
Who is a short fella.
He's like 5'4".
He would be a great Wolverine.
He would be a great Wolverine.
I would watch that.
He's got sad eyes, and that's something that I think Wolverine needs. Like,
No, imagine him floating in a tank all sad and full of anger and angst.
I'm behind that.
Yeah. I think Kit Harington could be a Wolverine.
Tim, how do you feel? Just question, because it just occurred to me. The kid who played Han Solo in Solo.
He's pretty good.
He's
But I don't think he's Indiana Jones. So here's as I'm thinking through this. There are two choices. There are two choices I have.
Okay.
One is Jeremy Remmers.
Okay.
I think he could do a really good
Jeremy
Indiana
Remmers?
He's Hawkeye.
Oh, Jeremy Renner.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Jeremy Renner. I was trying to look up the name.
All good. Yep,
right.
Yep.
So Hawkeye.
Yep.
The other would be Scarlett Johansson.
Ooh,
a badass archaeologist.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that would work.
I think she's old enough too that it wouldn't just be like, it's like, because that's a history professor.
Right.
Would it be a total reboot? Brand new from scratch? Yeah. There was never any other Indiana Jones?
There was never another
that's
Indiana Jones.
Reboot.
Yeah. Yeah. Reboot.
Yeah.
Right. Just
reboot.
Not like she's his daughter or some shit.
No.
Right.
Just
cool. Good.
Fucking
yeah.
Scarlett Johansson is the new Indiana Jones.
I will say.
Would she still be Indiana Jones?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to look
at what would her real name be?
Junior.
Nick in Boardwalk, who was married to the Swedish immigrant and was like the teetotaler.
Oh shit! God damn it!
I know. Hang on, I'm gonna look it up.
He's got a fucking lantern jaw.
Yeah. In Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah. He's.
Hang on.
You know,
we're googling it. Sorry, everyone who's listening to this.
Fuck.
Michael Shannon.
That's it.
So if I was gonna recast Dark Tower.
Ooh.
And they were going to actually make Dark Tower right. This is not a comment about Idris Elba, because I think Idris Elba could have made a fucking amazing Roland. I don't give a fuck about race in that
He'd
case.
He'd also
I think
make
it's
a
stupid.
Really good Indiana Jones. Anyway,
he would. But I think when it comes to just I think that Michael Shannon could be a really good Roland because he's very silent. He's stoic. He seems like the kind of guy who holds it in his emotions. Like he's a very tall, lanky-ish dude. A lot
of his strength in acting comes from being a monolithic force of emotion.
He's got a lot of good stuff going on with his face. I think Michael Shannon would be the best Roland. So I'm just gonna,
I love that
since,
idea.
Since that's something I can actually say as opposed to
I love that idea.
Vamping while you guys thought.
What John Krasinski, what's his wife? They were in
A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
His wife is Emily Blunt.
Okay. Yeah. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt as Reed and Sue Richards.
Ooh,
nice.
Yeah.
That'd
oh,
be
they'd
good.
Be great.
Wouldn't they?
They would. All right. Question 5.
Question 5.
This is a long question, so just bear with me. All right?
Okay.
In Australia, we have been having revolving prime ministers. We are up to our 6th PM in 11 years after previously having the same PM for the previous 11 years. To give the full sequence, Kevin Rudd, or K-Rudd, won in 2007. His first major act was to publicly apologize to the Indigenous peoples for their mistreatment, especially the Stolen Generation, where Aboriginal children were taken from their families to be raised by Anglo parents. He was knifed by Julia Gillard, an unmarried, deliberately barren, atheist female who gave an impassioned speech in Parliament about misogyny. She was then re-knifed by K-Rudd. I don't know what knifed means in this context, Molly says.
I assume beaten.
I'm assuming. I don't know what their policy is for that, for voting in PMs. In 2013, the Conservatives won power with Tony Abbott, he of the budgie smugglers. He was then knifed by Malcolm Turnbull, who we all thought would take action on climate change based on his previous actions, but has been pressured by the far-right members of the party. In August this year, there was another knifing with first one opponent failing to get enough support, Peter Dutton or Mr. Potato Head, Google his name to see why, and then finally ending up with ScoMo, whose full name is Scott Morrison. Given Trump, Brexit, the Australian PM situation, could you share something cool you've seen or heard lately? I would like to share a video of a mock children's group in the same vein as the Wiggles called the Democracy Sausages as they sing about the leadership spill history. It starts out kid-friendly but quickly devolves to chaos. And then she provides the link for that. Cheers from Jess from sunny Brisbane, Australia, pronounced Brisbane, not Brisbane. Sorry. And see this link for how Australians pronounce their capital city names. So again, this question from Jess from Brisbane is... Given the Trump, Brexit, and Australian PM situations, could you please share something cool you've seen or heard lately?
Into the Spider-Verse. It's out on video. Get it. Take it home. Watch it over and over and over again. There's actually a special like Spider-Verse track where you can watch it. And as you're watching the movie, they show you like scenes that they had in the movie and like villains that they were originally going to put into the movie and that they took out.
That's
cool. There's like storyboard bits that they plug in there. There's a Spider-Ham short that's part of the DVD that was originally scheduled to go before the movie. When you watch the movie in this alternate version, it starts with the Spider-Ham short and then goes into the Spider-Verse movie.
I could watch a whole bunch of Spider-Ham cartoons, God, yeah. Like Looney Tunes style with Mulaney.
Yeah.
Molly and I recently saw some sea turtles, like super up close. Like we were snorkeling in Hawaii. We saw some sea turtles.
They are cool.
They came out of nowhere.
You're snorkeling around and all of a sudden a fucking, you know, recently not endangered, I think.
You're still not supposed to touch them. So it was like, you had to back up real quick if you found one.
Just come up out of the coral, like, 3 feet away from you, and you'd have to backpedal and try to, like, swim away from it to give him its room. But they were very...
Because he's not going
to
swim away from you.
They're very unconcerned and unworried about our presence, and they were huge and medium-sized and fairly abundant in the one day we went out snorkeling, and that's fucking cool.
It was great.
That is cool.
You could just see them.
I will say if you haven't seen it yet, because it's been kind of blowing up, but go to the Facebook page for Nathan W. Pyle. He draws a comic series called Strange Planet.
That one is so hilarious.
Aliens talking like Earth like humans, but with weird ways of putting everything. I don't know how to explain it other than, here's a good example. There's two aliens, and one says, "You look more attractive." And the second one says, "I was exposed to the nearest star." And he's like, "You look very good." He's like, "I feel good. It's the star damage." And so, like, it's his hand, right? There's a lot of really great stuff. And I think that you would like it. It's a Facebook page for the artist. It's Nathan W. Pyle, P-Y-L-E.
Yeah.
Just, like, try not to pay any attention to how fucking Christian that dude is.
Yeah, you can't tell from his work, but his main page does have an info thing that's like, "I follow Jesus," which is a little much. But
it shows up in his work.
None of it's in his work. So you know what? If he follows Jesus, he's doing it right. Because I don't have to hear about it, and he's a good guy. So
we've successfully ruined Captain Marvel. If you have 5 questions, please send them to us.
Oh, God, please.
We're super running out. I think we only have like enough for...
The next episode is going to be
anything.
It.
Favorite color, favorite food, our shoe size.
Philosophical questions, personal questions, whatever.
If we can't answer your questions, we don't have meaning.
Or we'll try to make it funny.
That's right.
Tell us what you liked about Captain Marvel, what you're looking forward to in Endgame, which comes out very soon on Molly's birthday.
It's on my birthday!
with that, we're Geeks Without God, and we'll be back on your iTunes and Google Play and on Patreon, which you can support us on real soon. Have a great one!
Bye!
You know, I think my biggest complaint that there wasn't any taser face.
Authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
See, and that suddenly got very long.